Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We're in Highgate Woods, which is near... Not far.
Highgate. <It's> not... Weirdly.
We're near Highgate. You're better at this than me.
This week on Walking the Dog, Raymond and I were on home turf in North London's Highgate Wood with TV presenter, radio broadcaster, Instagram queen, and now author Angela Scanlon. I first met Angela briefly a couple of years ago at a radio studio, and I instantly got just this really good energy from her. She struck me as so genuine and kind of unshow-busy and just very warm. So I have been dying to get her on my podcast. But the woman has been pretty busy raising two daughters, fronting the BBC's Your Home Made Perfect, and now writing an incredibly brilliant memoir and sort of guide to life called Joyrider. Angela doesn't have a dog, but that's all right. We still love her. And having seen both her kids' reaction to Raymond, I give it a week, love. I had the best time with Angela. She just exudes this very relaxed sort of positive energy. I can't explain it. It's kind of impossible to be stressed around her, though. She told me about her childhood growing up in a large family of women and how having that beautiful red hair kind of made her feel a bit other out in the world. She also chatted about how she got into performing and how she kind of winged it when she got her huge TV break on The One Show. Apologies to Angela's mum, by the way, who didn't think she should admit that publicly. I love it. We also chatted about Angela's brilliant new book, Joyrider, as I say, which I totally recommend. There's some really heartfelt honesty in it. And she just writes very movingly about important stuff that's happened in her life, her eating disorder, the work she's done on herself in therapy. But it's also really warm and funny and, well, just very Angela. Raymond and I utterly adored our walk with Angela. And I got to sing a special lullaby inspired by Raymond to one of her daughters. I know you will love it too. I mean, the podcast, not the lullaby. That's a work in progress. I'll stop talking and hand over to the woman herself. Here's Angela and Raymond.
Come on, Raymond.
Come on, you little... Is this little furry bum is the cutest, and I've never said that about anyone before.
Come on, Raymond. Which way, Angela? Should we go this way or that way?
I think we go to the wild open spaces and then we'll, like, hang back into the woodland, yeah?
That sounds like my ideal date. Now, just to warn you, Raymond does a lot of this.
Just, like, loitering.
It's like he's browsing in Zara.
Okay,
and there's a sale on.
I can relate to that. Hard relate, Raymond. Don't buy the cashmere, FYI. I have so much respect for this because he's like, he's kind of so in his own worth that he's like, they can wait, dickheads. I'm just going to sit here and do whatever the hell I want for as long as I want. There's a queen in there, isn't there?
Raymond, come on. We're so lucky. We've got such a lovely walking companion today. Angela, I'm going to have to introduce you.
Go on then.
I say I'm going to have to, like it's some terrible obligation. But
I love that you're doing this on the fly with no paper. I mean, I know we're walking. It would look a bit weird to get a script.
But oh, yeah. No, I like it to be quite organic.
Yeah, grand. Let's see what comes out. Go for it. I'm really intrigued.
Whenever people say they're intrigued, they always mean concerned.
Yeah, slightly, but I'm into it. Go.
I'm so thrilled to have this woman on my podcast today. I'm with the very wonderful TV presenter, podcaster, and now soon-to-be best-selling author, Angela Scanlon.
Hey, girl.
We're in Highgate Woods, which is near... Not far.
Highgate. It's not weirdly.
We're near Highgate. You're better at this than me. Full disclosure,
go on.
You've turned up without a dog, but I still love you.
Yeah, I love dogs. Mm. And I've been very nice to Raymond, I feel, so far. So we're fine. And also I'm local and you needed someone for this week. So it's all worked out really well. Synchronicities all over the shop.
Hello.
Oh, look, they've the same hair. There is the cutest little boy with a mop of hair just like Raymond's. And another little one. Hi there. I like your Christmas jumper.
Hello.
I like people who stay in the Christmas spirit. My daughter is wearing her Christmas pyjamas. What month is it? It's, you know, not Christmas. How are you guys? See, dogs are just like magnets, aren't they? Bye.
Bye.
I hope they have sun cream on. I get very worried.
I think they make you a bit friendlier.
Yeah. But a bit more open.
You couldn't be any friendlier and more open.
Oh, no. So no. In real life, I say, the devil. No, I'm quite antisocial.
Are you?
Yeah. Like, I'll put my blockers on and, you know, don't come near me. Like, okay, so for example, I do a show called Your Homemade Perfect, right, on BBC Two. It's an architecture, like, virtual reality show. Okay?
You don't need to tell me what it is. Okay. I happen to love it.
Oh, do you? Great. Yeah. Okay, well, I'm going to show you the egomaniac that I am. Laura Jane Clark is one of the fabulous architects on it. Wherever we go together, when we film now, people are like, hi, Laura. They literally just walk by me. And I'm like, do I look really unfriendly? Or do I just look really shit? So she's like, you must get that all the time, do you? And I say, absolutely not. No one comes near me. I don't know whether it's my aura that I omit is like, back off, please.
Maybe you just have healthy boundaries.
Yeah, maybe.
Oh, look at that cute one.
Oh, she's lovely. Little I think boy. It's a he, actually.
Oh, is it? Oh.
Well, you... No, I didn't see the balls. I'm just looking at the face.
We're talking about a dog, I should say.
Oh, yeah. Thanks.
Very nice, dignified, elderly gentleman. Oh, we could go through... Oh, should we go this way? Should we go around the woods or
go
this
on.
Way?
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think we go this way.
Okay, I trust you.
Yeah.
So... You don't have a dog.
I don't have a dog.
Do you like dogs?
I do like dogs. So our old family friends were real dog people, okay? And I judge, like, the level, like, proper dog lovers let their dogs touch their own tongues, okay? Which makes me feel like I'm not in my bones a dog person, but that feels just like an extreme... like expression of dog loving.
Yeah, yeah.
So I want, do you lick Raymond?
No further questions at this time.
Okay.
Did you grow up with dogs?
Yes. We grew up with a dog called Daisy. She ran away. I feel still deeply ashamed. I'm like, how did that happen? Now that's the story. Who knows what happens? I'm one of four girls. We lived in the country. And I do think there's a real difference between how dogs are seen over here in a city versus how dogs are seen. Not that I grew up on a farm, but like animals live outside, they eat the scraps. Here, they're literally run the show. So it's quite different. It's quite different.
And this is in Ireland, we should say.
Yes, this is in Ireland.
I say we should say, if anyone hasn't worked that out, I don't know, I can't help you.
Exactly.
And whereabouts is this, Angela? It's
Meath.
Not Meath, Meath.
No. But everyone says Meath is maybe a better pronunciation of it, but Meath, it's a bit softer maybe in our accent.
And so you had Daisy?
Daisy was a tiny dog. Black. That's also how I describe cars. What kind of car is it? Red. Small black dog. So that was my overriding memory. We then moved on to a Labrador. Golden Labrador, who was absolutely wild, as they are. Okay, so here's the thing. My youngest sister, Annette, was terrified of animals. Terrified. Like, screamed, wailed, everything. My dad thought he hadn't read Philippa Perry's book about parenting. I can't even say it. I wonder how mine is going to turn out. And he said, he basically surprised her. Now, she's his favourite, so it was a gesture of love, but he surprised her with a little puppy, a golden Labrador, and... she nearly lost her bloody life. Anyway, the Labrador's like quite giddy and used to be in the back garden, but like on a big lead. I don't know if we could say, is that really bad to say?
I've had worse on this podcast.
Okay, fine. So, but I will never forget, I once went out to the garden. The dog was obviously really pissed off that he was on this lead. And he wrapped me around the pole with the lead, very clever little one. So they came out. My family came out to me wailing, having been wrapped around and like yoinked to the ground and him on top of me. I mean, if I was into tonguing dogs, it would have been right up my street. But I'm not. So it was kind of weird. And then we do have a dog now. I say we, I don't live there anymore, but my parents have a dog called Sandy. We're very much say what you see with the naming of dogs.
I want to know a bit about the Scanlon house.
I mean, I feel like I've painted quite a clear picture.
I'm sensing noisy.
Mm. Lively.
Yeah.
Like a little chaotic, I would say. But fun, mostly fun. Four girls and like very outdoorsy. I say outdoorsy, not in the like, you know, anorak and camping, just like go out there and come back when it's dark. So we had like huts and stuff. Like, I think it's why I feel quite relaxed in a woodland area.
And as you say, there were four girls.
Four, yeah. I'm second from the top.
And were you close to all your siblings?
Yeah. I mean, like, we're very close in age in that I think there was four of us under six at one point in time. And I don't know whether it's the number four, but you tend to like pair off with different ones at certain points in your life, depending on where you are. So, yeah, you always had a like a sidekick, I suppose.
Yeah.
Myself and my older sister had a tricksy relationship. Christine,
love you.
Yeah. We're thick as thieves now, but it was there was only 18 months between us. And I think now that I've had a second, and I can see my oldest daughter being like, are you fucking having a laugh? This one's staying. Like, it's a real shock to the system.
I mean, that must feel like your world has turned on its axis when that happens.
Well, the midwife said to me, she was like, oh, be really gentle. Now, I'm hypersensitive to it, maybe a little too much so. But she was like, imagine you arrive home and your husband's in bed with another woman. I was like, okay. And she said, but instead of telling her to get out the door, you have to say, isn't she gorgeous? You have to mind her and love her and be kind to her. And she's never leaving. You're like, okay, sorry, I'm supposed to be happy about this. As an older kid, that's quite the kick in the tits, isn't it?
It's a painful lesson.
Yeah.
But it's probably not a bad thing to learn.
Yes.
In some ways.
Yeah, that you're not the centre of the universe. Yeah.
Some people never learn it.
Yeah.
I could be in that part of the Venn diagram. And I've obviously read your wonderful book, Joyrider.
Thank you for reading it, because, you know, I have often skimmed.
Oh, it's so good. And it's handily, it touches on a lot of, I suppose, autobiographical stuff as well. There's elements of that, and we'll talk a bit more in depth about it, because I really did love it, as I say, and you're a phenomenally talented writer.
Oh, my God,
honestly,
you're going to make me cry. Thank you. Thank
not this
you.
Early on.
I know.
We haven't even got started.
We haven't even put whiskey in our coffee yet.
There are some sort of themes that, you know, interesting to do with your childhood. And you spoke in your book, which I found fascinating, about, you know, you've obviously got this beautiful red hair, which I'm very covetous of. I always wanted to have red hair.
Did you?
Yeah.
Really? That's so interesting to me. Because I just think our age group, people are like redheads. You know, like I say in the book, you're not really on the list.
What do you mean by that?
I mean, like, I'd have heard lads in school going, oh, I like blondes. Oh, no, I like brunettes. Like, you're literally not on the list.
It made you feel, I can see that. It made you feel slightly other in a way.
Yeah. And then as time went on, I kind of, and I only realised this in hindsight, but I became fiercely protective of it. But in a kind of, like, it made me feel very special and very odd at the same time, you know, which is like heady and confusing. But I do love my red hair. I think it was just at the time as a teenager, you just kind of want to copy and paste. And I wanted like, you know, tanned gorgeous skin with no freckles. Yeah. And I wanted to be able to have highlights like everybody else had highlights. And I couldn't, I was like, oh no, I've seen how that looks. A redhead with highlights. I mean, just Google. I think you pick it up. And it was a very narrow, representation, if that's the word, of what beauty was that time. So brunette was like bookish. Still hotter than redhead, but like a bit bookish. It was the like best friend. Everyone wanted to be the blonde bombshell. That was what sexy was if you were a teenager in the 90s.
Tell me about your parents.
My dad is a builder. He's one of 14. Yeah. One of 14. He falls somewhere in the middle. Now, I'd have to go through the names and I wouldn't dare. or would I? So he's one of 14. Was born in Mayo. How familiar are you with Ireland?
I know it reasonably well. Yeah. I mean, I love it. I know Dublin.
So Meath is close
to
Dublin.
Yeah.
But Mayo is as far away from Dublin as you can get, in every sense of the word.
I used to have an Irish boyfriend, and what I loved...
Where was he from?
What I loved is that his mother, he said, oh, Sadie thinks she's a cut above because she's from Waterford. And she'd say, it's where the crystal's from.
Well, also her name is Sadie, so she was posh. I mean, she was not one of the Marian years. Do you know what I mean? Have you heard of the Marian years? Actually, I don't even know. There's something to do with the Pope, and everyone who was born in 1954 was called Marian, including my mother. But Sadie, if you're Sadie from Waterford, she probably was a bit fancy.
So were your folks... I mean, it's so weird, isn't it? When people ask, you know, what class you were. It's like, but were you, how did you perceive?
So, I think I was completely unaware of what class was until I came over to this country. And I think that's something that a lot of Irish people relate to, or Aussies, anyone who's not English, frankly. Maybe the French have a bit of that old money thing. But by and large, there's a bit of it, but there's not really much of it. Or if there is, they're very other to the vast majority of people in Ireland, I think. But my dad, like, you know, went to England, left school really early, came to England to work. You know, not by choice like I was able to do, but because there was nothing for him to do. And he did really well for himself. He, like, created a business. Built a construction company and did property development for a long time.
Did you have one parent you were slightly closer to or more bonded with, do you think?
I think I was probably... It's probably by my mum. Like, I think I'm probably very like my dad in many ways. But it was a bit more traditional in that my dad was out working and my mum was at home with us. So we were, you know... There and like I was probably slightly unhealthily dependent on my mom for a long time.
But then I guess if that's spread out over four of you, it probably doesn't develop into full-blown enmeshment.
Yeah,
you know
that's
true.
I mean, it's close enough. I'm gonna say we're almost there. yeah. There is a bit of that.
Oh, we've got a dog here, Angela.
We do. She's lovely. Look at her now. She could be called Sandy. Whereas actually our dog called Sandy is a bit more ginger.
Now, you'll see. Ray's a bit standoffish, Angela.
I know.
You see. He's a bit snooty.
Hi, he is. I'm kind of into it, though. He's discerning, you know. And you guys are a bit alike.
What a bit touch me not.
No, I think more the fringe, like more the cascading hair. I was going visual. Sorry.
You'd have to have Alan Carr's dog.
A red setter.
Yeah.
Oh my God! I was in Alan's house the other day.
Oh my God!
What a nice man. He is divine, isn't he?
I can see you'd get
and
on
he
with him.
He was hungover. It was the first time I'd met him properly. I met him in radio too, but he was there doing a show. You know, you're always a bit we're doing our thing.
One of life's nice guys.
He's fabulous. Fabulous.
So. I'm getting a bit of a picture of your childhood, but I wanted to know, were you an extrovert? Were you shy?
So I think I presented as an extrovert. Now, are you into astrology?
No.
Okay. So I'm Capricorn with my rising, sun rising. I was hoping you could help me out here. Sun rising in Leo. Okay. So which means like, so your rising sign is how you present to the world and your sun sign, I'm going to say, is like the true version of you. So Capricorn's a bit more steady Eddie, they're the goat, hardworking, extremely loyal, good sense of humour, but like they wouldn't be the life and soul of the party. You'd find them in the corner having a chat. Leo, on the other hand, they are like larger than life. Well, centre stage all the time, little self-centred, like, but I can kind of, like, I think if you first meet me, you think, oh, jazz hands. She's very happy on the stage. But actually, so there was a real tussle, I think, because I presented like that. I'm doing a jazz hands move for anyone who can't hear the little shuffle. But actually, I was quite, probably quite shy and still am a bit shy, which is hard to believe for people. But I think there's a kind of, or maybe, no. Shyness is probably not the word. I think I'm very, very sensitive human. And as a child, that felt really overwhelming and really unacceptable, actually. Yeah. It was like, we don't have time now for this nonsense, for you to be feeling everybody's feelings and for you to be feeling upset about seemingly, you know, normal everyday things.
Yeah.
So I kind of like, you know, toughened up and I became much more comfortable with that, like I call it that jazz hands version of me, felt much more attractive to people, much more sparkly, much more, that's what people wanted from me was how I, or what I believed. And so that the sensitive kind of side of me got kind of slowly buried, I suppose. You know, and it took a long time to dig her up. She's back, bitch. So, yeah.
Do you think that's true of a lot of performers? Because I wonder whether in some ways the very nature of wanting to perform, perhaps, is... There's an element of hiding, I suppose.
Because I think you're literally putting on, you know, a face, going out, doing the thing, and then... you know, going home. But there's a real, like, lack of integration there. And it becomes very confusing, I think, and quite exhausting to do those two. Like, fine if you're conscious that you're going out, you're performing, it's a slightly amplified version of yourself. But if there's a total disconnect between how you present and how you are at home, then that's like, who am I? What am I? None of it felt very... Yeah, it's confusing.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And you talk, as I say, in your absolutely brilliant book, which is, there's elements of memoir. Some of it, I mean, I was laughing because you're a very funny writer as well, but there were some bits which really made me well up a bit. And you talked about your having an eating disorder. And
yeah.
I just think I really respected you for writing about that because it's a tough thing, I imagine, to talk about, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a tough thing for loads of different reasons. And I've kind of, again, like that disconnect between those, you know, how you present and the reality. And I have kind of wanted to speak about it for ages. And then I've been acutely aware that as soon as that comes out, you know, you're on the, like, there's a picture of you at a party and you look one way or the other, and there's an additional level of scrutiny that's given to you because you've, you know, shared this part of you, I suppose. So I kind of, I think you have to feel quite strong in yourself to share that, knowing that it may add scrutiny. But for me, I was like, when I was in the thick of it, in the depths of it, I suppose, and it went on for a long time, like, you know, and I say I dabbled with it, but I was kind of introduced to it in school, and then, you know, into my 30s. So it was like 15 years, kind of. So it's a long time to be in the grips of something like that. To a, you know, sometimes it was more, sometimes it was less. But I remember, like, now the only two people that I could relate to publicly were Karen Carpenter, who died, and Jerry Halliwell, who, and I remember her, she wrote in her book about, you know, rooting in George Michael's bin.
The chocolate cake.
Yeah. And it was kind of ridiculed. It was like, it was. My God, what a picture of, like, beastly lack of control, like feral. And it was ridiculed because there was such a lack of understanding around that. And I was like, oh my God, those are the two poster girls for this. So it's quite a shameful thing, or a scary thing on the one hand, shameful on the other. So I kind of just was like, oh yeah, no, it's not, like, you don't want to be that girl. And so, yeah, so there was a lot of shame attached to it. And for me, there was a kind of, I found myself over the years consciously, because it's so hidden, like a lot of addictions or addictive behaviours are, they're so hidden. And then I was like, I really, really was trying to tell people, friends of mine, as time went along, and I'd find myself sitting with nobody knowing about my history, talking about, oh my God, she's such a pain in the arse, or she's so skinny, would she just fucking eat a burger? You know, this kind of, like, just such a lack of understanding around such a sensitive, you know, psychological illness.
Because, of course, most of our socialising is based around food. Consuming food and drink.
Yep.
And every minute, every day of your life, you're confronted with it, aren't you?
Yeah. Because, and look, I have never been addicted to drugs or to alcohol, so I'm speaking without knowing. But, like, there's very clear boundaries around those. You know, abstain from those in order to stay on the wagon, so to speak. If food is your addiction of choice, I use that word lightly, but, like, whether that's overeating or bulimia or anorexia or whatever it is, it's literally every single day. So you can't really go through a day without being challenged by, that addiction. So it is, it's a very tricky one, and I think there's still not that much, you know, understanding truthfully around it. And it's frustrating. Yes. For people to watch, because you're like, and I mean, people who give up booze, who were once like the fun loving party girl, like, I think that's problematic when they give up drinking and their friends are like, hello, why are you so boring now?
Yeah.
You know, that there's challenges with changing your life for people close to you. But yeah, food is food, you know, can't live without it.
Are you still aware of it? Is it something you still think, you know, that's always with you in a way?
So I remember speaking to a friend I used to do Irish dancing, and I know, red hair, Irish, I'm basically Jean Butler. And I remember her saying to me, she obviously recognised that, like, my patterns, that I was going through the same thing as her. She kind of, like, pulled me aside one night, and she wasn't somebody I really related to on a deep level, but I remember her saying, you know, this will be something we always have, like, and you just manage it, and you just have to manage it. And I was like, so affronted by that. Like, I think in her mind there was a kind of comfort in the collective of knowing that, you know, we're together, and there's a kind of, I don't know, that she talked about it like a companion that she'd always have. And I was like, absolutely not. Are you kidding me? I have to live in this forever? No way. And I felt really, like, so there was a real determination in me not to be in that little hole forever. But obviously that was very naive. Truthfully, I'm like, as if, smell you later. So I just started working too hard. Are we sitting?
He's running now. Come on, Ray Ray.
Oh, look, I got butter in the little shop there. I find myself, if I ask for it, if I'm out somewhere and say, can I have some butter, please? They're like, sorry, computer, it's not working. So I have to say, can I have some butter? Butter, please.
So yeah. Tell me about how you ended up in TV.
I think it was secretly, I was like, oh, I think I'd quite like to perform. But there was no, I mean, it's so cliched, but like, you got to see it to be it. There was nobody on telly that I thought, oh, that's somebody who has a background similar to me, who looks like me. You know, obviously there's like a lot of white women on TV, but I didn't relate to any of them. They all had like quite posh accents or whatever else. And so it just never crossed my mind that I could do that. It just felt like a very foreign thing. I think there might have been whispers, but it was just like not really considered. And then I studied business in university.
Were you quite academic then?
I was kind of, like accidentally. Like, I mean, I did pretty well in my leaving cert, right? To the point where my mum, bless her, I have not forgiven her for this. When she added up my points, this is how the system works over there. She was like, oh, no, that can't be right. And she re-added them. It was right, FYI. But like, I remember people in my class going, you did not get that. One guy, Mark Duffy. I love a good.
You've moved on. You've really moved on.
He was like, you did not get that. Sure, you're thick. And I think I kind of, you know, maybe that was my persona, was like, I was very giddy in school and I was kind of...
I don't know about you, but I think my fear was always the idea that people thought I cared or wanted something. So I think I probably put on such a good act of not caring that they bought it.
Yeah.
And actually, I did passionately care. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if that's something... I don't know if that's something you recognise.
I totally relate to that. And it's funny because Brené Brown has this... I know, I love her. But she talks about how the denial of that doesn't make it any less painful when you don't get it. It's just more of a shock to you because you're like, oh my God, I really did want it. And also, I think sometimes you stop yourself from trying that extra little bit because you're so afraid of like plaster, like of really wanting something and potentially not getting it, that you go, none of it matters to me. So you're like, we'll see what happens. And it's a protection thing, isn't it? Yeah. You know?
But you ended up...
Yes, sorry.
It was quite by chance, wasn't it?
It was,
you were,
yeah.
You were,
I was doing personal shopping.
Personal shopping. Yeah. Where were you doing the personal shopping?
In Dundrum, in Dublin. It was like quite a... like Westfield, basically. And I basically... I mean, I was such a hustler. I was... So personal shopping, while like the women were in the dressing room and in Oasis and I was fitting their jeans, I'd like run out and be like, can I get a size in that? But also, will you put those on that mannequin? I'll be in with the crew in like on my lunch break. So I was producing these items while I was personal shopping. I didn't know I was producing. I was just like, you know, there's a mannequin there, put her in a red dress because... you know, Drew Barrymore wore one last night in a red carpet.
And then you were doing it for TV and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I loved the TV side of things, which happened totally accidentally because I was assisting the girl who was doing personal shopping. And then they came to her and was like, oh, we just want an expert to talk about the Oscars, essentially. And so she was like, oh, come on. And we did it together and it was live. And I remember thinking, oh, my God, because I danced. So it was like that kind of... rush of adrenaline, I guess, the kick of, oh my God, this could all go gloriously wrong. And there's something very addictive about that, I think. But yeah, TV felt immediately like right to me.
There's a lot of people on TV, but I honestly think there's only a handful of people that seem completely at home and they make you feel comfortable. I think Jonathan Ross is one. I think you're another. You're completely yourself. You're completely natural. You're not doing a TV voice.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting that. I think that's a quality that you've kind of either got or you haven't.
Well, I think it's because I kind of wasn't aware of the rules, you know, so I didn't know. I remember people saying afterwards, oh, did you go to presenting school? And I was like, no, where's that? Like, I would have if I knew it was a thing. I didn't realise I had to train. And then they told me that when you're speaking to camera, you're supposed to hold your hands like this, like a kind of 1920s portrait. And so you're holding your hands like this as you're talking. I'm like, oh, my God, my hands are going so 90.
Clasped in front of you.
Yeah, like a queenie kind of pose. Yes. And I was like, oh, wow. Oh, yeah, no, I don't know the rules. So I think maybe because I didn't, there was a freedom to that, and then I just kept doing it. Like, I was really tenacious and I was really persistent and annoying, I'm sure. But like, any time I found a little window where somebody worked in the industry, I was like, so I remember being booked to talk, ironically, about Size Zero and the effect on like eating in the noughties. I was like, I got you, I'll talk about this. On a documentary, and the researcher, her mother worked in Kids TV, in RT, we're going out this way. And actually we could go that way and the long way around.
Okay.
Let's do that. And so I remember she said that, like just dropped it as a little nugget. I was like, okay. So I emailed her afterwards. I was like, it was really great to work with you, la la la. It would be really great to meet your mum. And she said, you know what? My mum's great, but you're not for Kids TV. And she was like, you need to meet my dad. I was like, okay.
I was about to write her off, and now
I like her. She's like, you should meet my dad. I thought, grand, I'll meet anyone, frankly, right now. And turns out, so I met this chap. We call him afterwards the lovely old Englishman. He's not. But I worked with him for years, still do. He's a guy called David Blake Knox, who worked alongside Ruby Wax for very many years. He produced Jerry Ryan in Ireland for years. Like a brilliant, brilliant producer. Now, I knew none of this. And I had lunch with him. And we had a little chat. And he was like, yeah, I'd love to work with you. It was only afterwards that I found out this guy is like amazing.
Yeah.
And so he was the first person. So we worked up lots of fashion ideas at the time. And he said to me, and I had done this with other producers who I'd get in touch with and go, oh, we can do a fashion program. And they'd go, we'll take that now and bring it into the commissioner and nothing would ever happen. And I remember David saying, you need to come into the room and meet the commissioner. And it was the first time I thought, oh, wow, this feels... It felt different. So we went in. Anyway, we didn't get the show. But I had another meeting with the commissioner where he told me, by the way, that show's not going to go ahead. And it was kind of like nailing the coffin before we even got going. And he said, if there's anything else, you know, that you want to do, definitely drop me a line. I was like, I want to do a documentary. It's like, okay, I mean, I really have another meeting. And I said, it's about redheads and it's called Oi Ginger. And it's exploring gingerism as the last remaining acceptable prejudice. So yeah, basically, I said, I want to do this documentary. And he was like, okay, that they had me kind of pegged as this like fashion type.
This was Oi Ginger, wasn't it? Yeah.
This was Oi Ginger. And so I was like, I honestly don't want to do fashion on telly. But obviously that's what I was known for and there was a credibility there. And so I said, Oi Ginger. And he was like, okay. And we made it. I had honestly the most fun I've ever had in my life. Vinnie Byrne was the director. And I remember him saying, I was like, what do you want me to do? What do you want me to do?
Yeah.
I was like, just be yourself. And I didn't realise how important that was in that moment on so many levels. It was like, here I am with actual professionals who work in this gig, who are saying, we trust you enough to like follow your instincts, do your thing. We've got you. And it was, I was so lucky.
There's something in your book, which again, I found fascinating, which is you talk about when you worked on the One Show.
Yeah.
You were covering Alex Jones's maternity leave,
yeah, right?
And you wrote about it in the book. So it was so fascinating, Angela, because of course I would have had no idea watching you. I'm watching this thinking, God, she's great. You know, this is, must be a big gig, but she's so in control. And of course, behind the scenes, as you write about, you were kind of winging it, weren't you?
I was, like, absolutely winging it. So, I mean, this is the one thing that my mom called me after she read the book. And she said, now, are you sure you want to write them? She said, how are the BBC going to feel about you saying that you basically lied to them and you didn't know what you were doing? And I was like, do you know what? I think they'll be fine. So anyway, I was filming Robot Wars. But it hadn't aired, so we'd just started filming it. And up until that point, really, I had done like a bit of behind the scenes for The Voice. I had done the BAFTAs red carpet. I'd done Tea in the Park. So like a little bit of live, right? Tiny, tiny. Once, basically. And anyway, I was like, the one show. I was used to in fashion and like kind of pitching articles and stuff like that. So I was like, oh, that magazine show, I can pitch bits into that. So I remember trying to get a meeting, never get a meeting. And eventually I got one, and I went in with my little notebook and all my ideas, and he's like, nah. But I was so not bothered. I was like, yeah, fair enough. And I was so used to like just not even getting feedback when you'd send an article idea to a magazine and they'd be like, not for us, whatever. So I was kind of resilient in that sense. Anyway, then so he said to me, and this is like the editor of the show, he said to me, have you done much studio? And I was like, yeah, I've done loads of it in Ireland. I'd basically, apart from my doc's, never really done any telly in Ireland. Did a travel show, but I've never done any live at this point. And I was like, yeah, loads of it. And he was like, okay. And that was the end of our conversation. And then he booked me for like one of the short films in on the one show, and I was absolutely delighted. Anyway, cut to a few months later, I'm up in Glasgow doing Robot Wars, mammoth production. I was like, how here alongside Dara O'Brien, who was an absolute pro. This was like, you know, he's used to sell out stadiums. We're in it all just felt like really overwhelming, and I was like, I am not prepared for this. I don't know what I'm doing. I felt like really wobbly. And then they rang and were like, could she cover studio on the one show? I was like, oh, sweet mother of Jesus. But it was kind of that moment of like, face your fear. I say face your fear and eat it. I don't know if I'd recommend it, but I was like, go do it. So I flew back down and did the show. And I mean, genuinely, I did not know what a hard count was. So somebody said to me, how do you like doing a hard count? And I was like, oh, you know yourself. It depends. A hard count, sorry, just for anyone who doesn't know, is basically 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, we're out for the news. Like, there is no fannying around.
Yeah.
And he said, how do you like a hard count? As in, do you want it from 10? Do you want me to go, you're done? And I said, oh, well, I suppose everyone does them differently, don't they? And I could hear this silence on the end of the phone. I was like, and then I rang my agent and I was like, what's a hard count? And she was like, oh dear. Anyway, that was fine. And I went and I did the show, and I mean, I was with Matt Baker, who in fairness was driving the ship. I was just, you know, doing the thing. But it was daunting and it was big and it went really well. And then I covered maternity leave, which suddenly changed it from being me just having fun and winging it and being myself to, oh my God, I have everything to lose now. My head's above the parapet. I'm supposed to know what I'm doing here. And so I just didn't ask any of the questions and felt very, like, very overwhelmed.
Did you?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, it was, you know, I had to go into the dressing room and like, do little breathing exercises. And I was, like, I was constantly on edge. Even thinking about it, I was just completely overwhelmed and out of my depth. And I found it really hard to, you know, just be in it and enjoy it. I mean, that's something that I still find difficult.
Do you?
Yeah, yeah. And I have to work, like, very consciously to go, no, this is it. This is it.
Yeah, yeah.
Enjoy it, because you could be dead tomorrow.
Your career had reached this absolute peak. It was kind of everything you would want.
Yeah. all these things that shouldn't have happened really had happened quite effortlessly, and I was miserable. Miserable. And look, and I think I feel really lucky in hindsight, because I'm like, oh, to be gifted. Like, because I think a lot of the time you can spend your whole life just going to the next thing and always assuming that because you haven't got to that thing, that's the reason you feel how you feel, if it's not a good feeling. And so, whereas I had gotten all of the things, if I had written a list, everything on that list I had done, and I was like, oh my God. Still, and I genuinely thought, I was like, I'm never going to be happy. And I was in my mid-30s or early 30s, and I just thought, oh, that is like so grim to have a real realization or a belief that nothing will like turn you on, basically. Yeah. And so it was at that point that I thought, okay, yeah, I really need to sort my shit out and like dig a little bit deeper, because my focus had always been on the shiny carrot, on the big job or the like, outside validation, I suppose. And then I was like, oh yeah, okay, it's not really doing much for me.
I guess it's a bit of a wake up call where you think, like, okay, how do I want to live my life? And you worked quite hard on yourself, is what I'm saying, didn't you?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm a kind of all or nothing type of woman. Mm. And so I suddenly was like, oh, hang on, I am now going to shun the trappings and meditate every day. And it became like, you know, therapy. I tried all of the different therapies. I was like, I was throwing myself into this. And I did take it seriously. And I'm so glad that I did.
Yeah. What did you learn, do you think, about yourself?
Okay, the biggest thing, and it's still the most challenging thing for me, and it will sound bonkers to a lot of people, but I'm sure most people will relate, or a lot of people will relate, is that I have needs as a human being. I had no idea. I had kind of created this like illusion that I was self-sufficient, I was financially independent, I was emotionally independent, I was absolutely fine. I could keep going, I had immense energy, I could I didn't even think about what I was doing next week, never mind next month. There was no reflection, there was no sitting down and going, what do I want and what do I need in order for this to, like, be, for me to be okay in this? I just was like, just unaware. It felt like a need was a weakness, or to need other people was like very frightening to me, which is why I think when I had my daughter that really hit home, because there was like literally no avoiding all of the people that you need when you have a baby. And the biggest thing, and the thing that I have to keep checking in with myself is, oh yeah, okay, hang on, what do I need here? And then I'm allowed to have needs, and it's not some sort of weird like defect.
Which is kind of the Pink Panther chocolate bar. That broke my heart.
The Pink Panther chocolate bar, I know.
And Angela's book, there's such a touching moment when she's at the Irish equivalent of sort of Centre Pops, really.
Look at you, that's a good memory, yes.
With Uncle Johnny?
Oh my God, yes.
And Uncle Johnny's quite a glamorous figure, isn't he?
He's a glam guy.
The exotic.
Yeah. And
urban
funny
life.
And like, yeah, just a bit fab.
And they took you to the shop and Uncle Johnny said, have what you want.
Yeah. And so everyone went around, they're like, oh, book it a spade, or I'll have a game, or I'll have this, that.
Filling
the other.
Their boots.
Fill your boots, as you should, you're a kid. Push. Take the piss. Push those boundaries. And I, on the other hand, was like, again, that kind of reading the room, going, I think if I ask for very little, they'll think I'm such a fab little girl. And I'm so, like, kind and so selfless and I'm lovely. And so I said, oh, I'll have this bar. It was a 5p Pink Panther bar. I mean, 5p is more than 5p now, but still, it was cheap. And I remember thinking, I mean, I didn't give it much thought. I just knew this is gonna be a quiet little win for me. And I was sure that I'd be told, cop on, go over there and get yourself a toy. And he was like, I mean, I have six screaming children here. If you want a bloody, like, toxic bar, have it for 5p. It's not really my issue. And so I took the bar, but I remember leaving the shop and being like, oh my God, I was trying so hard to be like lovable by being small,
by reducing yourself almost.
Yeah, and then he didn't give me anything
else.
Well,
can I say, it's ended very happily because we're outside Angela's.
We are.
Absolutely. It's my dream house.
Come on in. Has she fed?
Yes.
Yeah, oh, you're fed. You're looking cute as a button, aren't you? Come on in. I really need to get the cushions out here.
We're in Angela's lovely garden.
She's probably ready for sleep, so.
Hi, hungry hound.
Angela, such a nice atmosphere in your house. I love your girls. They're gorgeous. This is so beautiful, this place that you've created and your family. And I want to know when you met Roy, which feels appropriate to ask you that as your breastfeeding.
Yeah. It's all happening.
I thought that was intimate. And I thought, I'm watching her breastfeed. It's fine.
It's fine. We've crossed those lines, I feel. Oh my God, although I did catch sight of myself in the mirror the other day, and I've been really like adamant that I'm going to be freestyling, but from up here they look small. But when you're faced front on with them, they are absolutely enormous. And Roy was like, oh my God, you need to take a picture of the time your tits were bigger than the baby's head. It's like, oh my God, we went to Claridge's for Easter because we're bougie, and I literally was whipping them out. And I mean, not like trying to make people uncomfortable, but you know, doing my feminist duty. But I really did not realize how obnoxiously large they were. No, I have a friend who this is before I had kids, and we went out one day to a cafe, and she had one of those giant muslin cloths, and she put it over her head to feed the baby, like a little wigwam, like a little tent. I was like, babe, I think that's just like to cover the baby. It's like, I can't see you. I don't know. Yeah, she's like fussing underneath trying to get herself sorted. It was so mad. Anyway, sorry, myself and Roy met. We'll be 8 years married this June. So we met like probably 11 years ago, maybe.
Yeah. And what do you think? Did you know? Was it a kind of like, yeah, he's the one?
So it was weird because we met through two of our best friends. And I remember Fionnuala, my friend, saying, I think you and Roy would get along really well. And I remember thinking, okay, grand. Anyway, we met kind of accidentally when a friend of mine was over from Spain. And we went, it was a bit of a mad night. Anyway, we had a little cheeky snog that night, right? But like, that was it. And then I think he took my number and was like, oh yeah, yeah, I'll drop you a line. Nothing. Nothing. Now, I had zero interest
with Roy.
I was like, I have no interest in this man contacting me. I was a little bit intrigued. And then when it was like silence, I thought, how fucking dare he? I wouldn't have answered the phone, but I'd like to have had the choice. So I thought, oh my God, how rude. Anyway, and then he got in touch around 6 months later. 6 months. And I said, and he's like, I know this is a bit out of the blue, but do you want to go for a drink? I was like, actually, maybe. So we did. But I had ideas. I was like, I don't think, I mean, it's fine. I'll just go. I was kind of in that, like, say yes to everything.
Yeah.
I think there's a book, isn't it? And so, and then we met, and I had such preconceptions about him. We sat down, we had a drink, and like within the first drink, I don't know what the timings were, I was like, oh, wow, this feels very different. Mm-hmm. Felt like I knew him from another life. And, Oh, Babs, come on.
Do you like Raymond? Do you like Raymond? Do you like Raymond?
Do you like Raymond?
Do you like Raymond?
Will you send me a recording of this?
Do you like Raymond? Do you like Raymond? Do you like Raymond? Do you like Raymond? I need to let her sleep. Angela, this has been one of my favourite podcasts.
She's just cute.
Sorry to ruin your moment. It was really sentimental and I was enjoying how sincere you were being.
I mean, that's the trailer.
She bombed. Most people bring a dog. I've brought my own baby. And I didn't know you were, that we were neighbours.
I know.
Pretty much.
Wow. Yeah. You're never going to get rid of me.
I think we should be friends.
I think... Can I be your friend?
Yeah.
You see, I've been reading your book, and in your book it says, ask for what you want.
Ask for what you want,
please. I've just asked.
And the universe shall provide. Bitches. So true, though, but it's vulnerability.
But I think it's nice to say, can I be your friend?
I like that. I've never done it before, but it worked, I think. We'll see. Follow-up is the key.
Angela, will you say goodbye to Raymond?
Bye, Raymond, you dotty little Ewok. I'll never forget. I'll see you next week. Now we're friends with your mom.
I really hope you enjoyed listening to that. And do remember to rate, review and subscribe on iTunes.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.